about to get started.
I was gonna leave. I don't want to sit in the bathroom for 15 minutes.
It's already on.
I'll go to the place.
Hey guys. Hey Jess. Long time no see. Hi Miriam. I'm getting a little bit better at this Periscope thing. I can kind of see the comments a little bit on the bottom. Feel free, if you guys love what I'm saying, you can tap the actual screen, and that's basically a way of giving hearts. It's more or less like a compliment if you love everything that I'm saying or talking about. This is Dr. Jacqueline Tolentino. I'm here live from Denver, Colorado at the Nutrition and Health Conference. A quick look at the view over here. Let me see if I could do this. Double tap to flip view from the hotel room and take a look at those mountains in the background. I think that's awesome. And just yesterday the weather was 25 degrees and it was snowing. And today it's probably 70 degrees outside. So I'm going to get started here. The purpose of this Periscope is to educate you all on the types of things that I've been learning while I've been here at the conference. Today was day one. Tuesday and Wednesday, again, more lectures, a little bit more thorough in certain things. There was definitely a huge discussion about the importance of omega-3s for many different reasons. I noticed a lot of the different lecturers, they talked about omega-3s as it pertained to every single aspect of nutrition or their particular topic. So just to summarize that portion of it, it's huge. Omega-3s are huge for a smarter brain, better weight control. It's good to fight against inflammation, like I've mentioned in the past. It actually does help a lot with moods. It does have an effect on the brain for not just cognition and memory, but multiple different reasons. It's great for the eyes, for clear vision, and also for a healthy heart. So I did notice that a lot of the nutrition experts were talking about how important omega-3s are in our diet. I'm basically going to touch base on a few of the things that the lecturers were talking about in particular. Every hour and a half or so, they did have different lecturers, but the four that I'm going to talk about in more detail today are the ones that I thought were the most important. The first lecturer, Dr. Andrew Weil, he did talk about fish and the nutritional value of fish, not just what we think of as the best resources of fish. We often think of just omega-3s. You talked also about sustainability and how it's not the fact that there's not too few fish, but we do have too many people. He also touched base on toxicity of different kinds of fish and how important it is to also recognize that. Fish is a brain food, he mentioned. It's not just a nutritional source of our DHAs, also the omegas and taurine, for example. Eating fish, it does increase the brain's volume, which we know that when patients start to develop memory and cognition problems and even Alzheimer's, that does have a huge effect on that. And since it does increase brain volume, it does help to increase our cognition and memory. He said the important ways that you should be cooking as far as, you know, everyday patients and how we should actually be thinking about fish. You'd never want to fry your fish. Baked or broiled fish is really the best way to go, also steamed. And he mentioned that people who don't like fish have never actually tasted fresh fish. Everybody started laughing in the audience when he said that, but I actually agree with that. I think it's true. So fish, it should never really smell or taste fishy, and if it does, basically what you're smelling are the amines and the metabolic breakdown products of fish. So that's something also to remember. It's also to remember you should be cooking at lower temperatures. Steaming, he's a big proponent of steaming. For example, if you're going to be cooking your salmon, he mentions cooking it at between 300 and 325 degrees. That's really the best temperature for cooking salmon. The Marine Stewardship Council, if you look this up, www.msc.org, they basically put a blue and white label on the fish that's actually sustainably harvested. You can check out that website to learn more. It talks about the different kinds of fish, where you can buy those types of fish that are also, you know, making sure that we keep our environment safe from sustainability purposes. So he did mention that the plant-based sources of EPA and DHA, they still have to be converted in your body in order for it to be actively used. So when you're thinking of the omegas, you know, the fish is the greatest, I guess, the best source that we can think of for now. He did mention that plant-based sources of the omegas, you still have to convert it in the body. And just like vitamins, some people are not able to convert these plant-based sources into active components. I also thought it was interesting that he mentioned pescatarians. They have the lowest morbidity and mortality amongst the different types of people that you're eating, you know, fish or vegetarians or, you know, mainly, I guess it would be like a regular diet if you do eat meats and have a balance between the others and so forth. Pescatarians mainly eat fish or seafood along with vegetables. He said that vegetarians and meat eaters are actually at the top for the highest risk of morbidity and mortality, and pescatarians had the lowest. So I myself have actually been trying to follow more of a pescatarian type diet. I actually eat very, very little meat, so I'm trying to follow that. So next up, Dr. Bonnie Kaplan, she talked about multinutrients and how important they are with mental disorders and how the serotonin pathway in the brain uses many different types of micronutrients in order to make that pathway work. So she mentioned that micronutrients were great for treating, or at least treating the symptoms of, to help the symptoms of patients with psychiatric disorders like depression, anxiety, ADHD, PTSD, stress, and autism. I think it was important to show us that serotonin pathway and how it's a multi-micronutrient type of pathway, and it's not really just one in particular, so you do need multiple. Micronutrients cost less than 2% of the conventional treatments that we use or physicians use to treat psychiatric illness, like, you know, medications. So why is it not stressed enough? No idea why other doctors don't stress the importance of getting it from every source possible. Definitely diet plays a huge role. She did mention that there are several randomized controlled studies that boast how effective micronutrients are in helping patients that have symptoms from depression, anxiety, ADHD, and so forth. So the research supplements, the ones that your physicians can recommend to you, that they actually have a lot more potency and purity than a lot of the over-the-counter ones or the conventional ones that you'll find like at Walgreens, CVS, maybe even Vitamin Shoppe and so forth out to the public. So definitely do your research on your supplements so that you can make sure that you're getting the adequate quality and the right purity levels and the potency of the vitamins and micronutrients that you are using in supplement form. One of the dietitians, she talked about the human microbiome, the gut, and how the connection was between the brain and the gut. So this is probably something that people don't realize. It was talked about and discussed and researched a long time ago, and it kind of went on the back burner, and now it's coming back again, and everybody's talking about how important it is between your mind and your actual gut. So she used the acronym at the end. The acronym was MEND, M-E-N-D. And basically she mentioned that in summary, you should be minding your meals, minding your meal timings. You should eliminate food triggers, that was the E. Nourish your gut garden was the N. And of course, de-stress. And she listed several examples of ways that we should be de-stressing, because we know that does cause inflammation, messes with your hormones and so forth. Dr. Arti Prasad, she talked about the gut microbiome again and hypersensitivity, and she focused more on patients that suffer from bloating, irritable bowel syndrome, and small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. I actually heard this from a patient a couple years ago, SIBO, S-I-B-O, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And basically, patients who suffer from irritable bowel type symptoms, bloating, abdominal pain, inconsistent bowel movements, and so forth, they do start to develop these symptoms over time. And maybe after evaluation by a doctor who has ruled out more serious conditions, they're still not able to figure out what's going on or what's wrong with these types of people. Basically, if all of those things are ruled out, more severe medical diseases and conditions by your doctors, whether it's your family doctor, your GI doctor, integrative, and so forth, once those things have been ruled out, you know, it's important to think about what else could be causing it. And, you know, depending